We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 10, entitled Divisions of the Creation, text number 4. Maitreya Uvacha Virinchapitata Chakre Divyam Vasa Shatam Tapaha Atmanyatmanam Avisya Yataha Bhagavan Najaha Maitreya Uvacha Virinchupitata Chakre Divyam Varsha Shatam Tapaha Atmanyatmanam Avisya Yataha Bhagavan Najaha Maitreya Uvacha Virinchapitata Chakre Divyam Varsha Shatam Tapaha Atmanyatmanam Avisya Yataha Bhagavan Najaha Maitreya Uvacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Virincha Brahma, Api also, Tata in that manner, Chakre performed, Divyam celestial, Varsha Shatam, 100 years. Tapaha, penances. Atmani, unto the Lord. Atmanam, his own self. Avisha, engaging. Yataha, as it was spoken. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Ajaha, the unborn. Translation. The greatly learned sage Maitreya said, O Vidura, Brahma, thus engaged himself in penances for 100 celestial years, as advised by the personality of Godhead, and applied himself in devotional service to the Lord. Purport. That Brahma engaged himself for the personality of Godhead, Narayan, means that he engaged himself in the service of the Lord. That is the highest penance one can perform for any number of years. There is no retirement from such service, which is eternal and ever encouraging. Someone was waiting for me and said, Maharaj, when can I talk to you? When can I talk to you? When can I tell you about my problems? And I thought, well, you know, why don't you tell me all the good things that happened? Why don't you tell me all the nectar, right? Instead of telling me all the problems. Just tell me all the nectar that happened, everything, right? The whole, don't leave anything out, the full description, right? Full color, everything. And it worked, actually. Phew, what a relief. And it was nice also. It was an enlivening visit instead of, like, problems. Because it is a fact that devotional service is eternal and ever-encouraging, like Prabhupada says. So whatever problems remain are actually from another realm, not from the realm of devotional service. They are remaining as leftovers from material entanglement. But on the spiritual platform, devotional service is all auspicious. It is ever encouraging, and therefore there is no question of problem. Rather, there is only nectar. So this is the meditation. It may not be possible to exactly experience it like that. We do feel the pangs of material existence. But remembering this is glorious. If we can remember that there is so much nectar in devotional service and just meditate on that nectar, then maybe one day we too will be speaking from our heart when we'll say that devotional service is ever encouraging and always nectar. Maybe that day will come. So, Lord Brahma is an extraordinary devotee of the Lord who is not at all in this material world for sense gratification. It is not that Lord Brahma is thinking, how will I make a nice universe for my enjoyment? As if he's building a little cottage, you know. Lord Brahma, rather, is thinking of the Supreme Lord and how to fulfill the mission of the Supreme Lord. And Lord Brahma is deeply ingrained with a sense of responsibility that the Lord's will must be executed. And the whole purpose of the universe is to uplift all the living beings and to bring them to the lotus feet of the Lord. And there is no other purpose of the entire creation. In this way, there is no other purpose in Lord Brahma's heart. That is his aim. The aim to exist for the pleasure of the Lord. So this is the example. Swayambhur Naradashambhu Kumaro Kapilo Manu Praladu Janako Bhishmo Valir Vyasakir Vayam. So the 12 Mahajans are mentioned, and Lord Brahma is referred to as one of the 12 Mahajans, or one of the particular personalities who are setting the standard for all to follow. So Lord Brahma, his spirit of absorption in devotional service, absorption in executing the plan of the Lord, absorption in simply trying to purify himself so that he becomes eligible to function as the servant of the Lord. All this are the activities of the Mahajan, which means they are applicable to all. They are universal principles. So Lord Brahma is teaching us this universal principle of austerity. In this way, we can see that while Lord Brahma is benefited from the process of performing the austerity, he is benefited himself, and simultaneously, while he is doing that service, he is also doing another service, the service of teaching. So we are also experiencing that whatever service we do in devotional service is actually already helping us to go on to the next. That the service we are doing today has value in itself, but actually tomorrow we'll realize that it was only a preparation for the service that we are doing now. And the service of tomorrow will only be a preparation of the service for the day after tomorrow. And in this way, there is an eternal progression. And our responsibility is increasing and increasing. The pure devotees, they are very careful to make suitable arrangements for the Supreme Lord. Everything is very nicely done. Just as we are in the deity room, making sure that everything is very nicely arranged. It cannot be that in the deity room something is not done. Something of the prescribed duties is left out. It cannot be done that we skip some part of the procedure. It cannot be done because it would mean that we are not going to the maximum extent to make perfect arrangements for the Supreme Lord. Everything just nice, first class. This is the standard of devotional service of the inner circle of the Lord. We saw that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when in Jagannath Puri during Rath Yatra, when there was a big crowd, he was surrounded by various devotees. And they formed rings around the Lord. And there was one ring of devotees around the Lord of his most intimate associates. They were the closest. And then there was a second ring of devotees who were more removed. They were the assisting devotees. So this is a fact, that there are different rings around the Supreme Lord and also around the spiritual master. And a devotee may, according to his surrender, get the opportunity to enter in a particular circle. Just as to be taken up in the circle of devotees and to be allowed to live in the temple, there must be a certain standard. Obviously, for regulative principles, and if someone is not following four regulative principles, the devotees tend to react quite strong. Right? And some devotees will start saying, this person cannot stay here. Right? Very loud and strong and angry and upset. No, this is here. It must be four regulative principles. Very important. Devotees, four. Yes, so the Vaishnavas, to enter into the circle of Vaishnavas, there are the there's a little Freudian slip there. Let's start with the circle and then we go on to the circus. To enter into the circle of Vaishnavas, one must follow four regulative principles. That sometimes it becomes a circus. Is in this age of Kali, right? That is the case. Then we are not so qualified, but anyway, somehow or other, by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, we are here. So, devotional service is there. Whereas we find Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing how the Vaishnavas, after the departure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, continued and were daily chanting at least a lakh of names, or 64. Some were chanting 2 lakhs, some were chanting 3 lakhs of names. An inconceivable number, and very difficult to maintain. So, how different has devotional service been presented to us? We have been able to go on doing what we already did, fixing cars, playing with computers, right, making telephone calls all day, and all these things, and we can just keep on doing that and engage in the service of the Lord, driving cars, you know. And suddenly, it is devotional service, right? Before, it was sense gratification, and now it is devotional service. In this way, we can realistically say the circus of Vaishnavas, right? It is, it's in one sense funny to see, right, how it is all possible. But this is the wonderful arrangement of the Supreme Lord, that the material energy can also be transformed, and that its Hari Sambandha Vastu, its original spiritual identity, can become uncovered, because everything is emanating from the Supreme Lord. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava Mata Sarvam Bhavartate. So therefore everything is emanating from the Lord, and therefore as Srila Prabhupada said to Allen Ginsberg, who said, how can we make a form of God out of the material energy? Stone, metal, picture, how can we? Prabhupada said, immediately defeated him from the onset by saying, material energy doesn't exist. That settled that. There was no more argument after that. So, it is a fact. Material energy does not exist. It is only the illusory energy which makes the living entity separate from the Supreme Lord. And then the energy of the Supreme Lord acts in a different way when this separatism is there. And as soon as one connects to the Supreme Lord, the energy of the Lord, which is connected to the Supreme Lord, also acts in a different way. So therefore, we are engaged in modern times in devotional service. And that is all right. But the principles of devotional service never change. Whether these principles are to be applied for Lord Brahma, or whether these principles are to be applied for us in our present day life, same principle. Tapo divyam putrake yena sattvam sujetya smat brahma sukhyam tranantam. One cannot ever escape from austerity. There is no such thing. We are not in this age looking for austerity. The Vedic culture has recognized that austerity is one of the principles through which one can gain knowledge. And we find in the Bhagavatam the description of the instructions that were given by Jad Bharat to Maharaj Rahugan. And Jad Bharat said, Rahugana tapasana jati, he said that, my dear Maharaj Rahugan, we must perform austerity. And then he begins to describe that various processes. He describes Jalagni Suryar, or sitting in the water up to the neck in the winter, sitting in the hot sun in India in the summer in meditation with a ring of fire around oneself. He's describing, we have seen these things in India, how yogis are doing these things still today. Yes. But such austerity is not required in devotional service. In bhakti, the austerity is simply to not act for our own comfort, but to act for the comfort of the Lord. And whatever discomfort we accept, that we must. That is glorious. That is wonderful. And that will make us strong. So practice is required, because otherwise one has no sense of austerity. We don't have much sense of austerity, because in this age of Kali, one of the legs of Brahma that are broken is that sense of austerity. It is said that whereas illicit sex destroys the sense of cleanliness, whereas meat eating destroys the sense of compassion, it is intoxication that destroys the sense of austerity. So all of us have a history, or most of us, and therefore austerity is not exactly our strongest side. Right? We are somewhat weak on the austerity side. So we should not try and prove to ourselves and others that we are so austere, because we are actually not. Right? And if we compare ourselves to the great personalities of Bhagavatam, who were able to perform tremendous austerities, then we are not able. And as soon as we start thinking that we are, and as soon as we start following the same level of austerity as the personalities of the Bhagavatam, there is the risk very much that we will not be able to maintain with time. Because time is the most austere. It is time that is really the test. It is not so difficult to perform some great austerity for some time. That's all right. But with time, very difficult. And therefore, austerity is not our principal meditation. Our meditation is the pleasure of Krishna and how wonderful devotional service is. We see How merciful Krishna is. How kind. He has made so many nice arrangements. How mercy comes in unlimited ways. And this is our meditation. How much we are the recipient of the mercy. Then the austerity disappears in the background. We become absorbed in service. We become absorbed in kirtan. Who thinks of austerity during kirtan, right? It's not there, right? Although the things we are doing there are inconceivable, right? I mean, the amount of energy that in like 20 minutes is just churned out is probably more than other times in many hours. And yet, right, we're not complaining, oh, I have to work so hard, right? I didn't see anyone complaining like, oh, so much, so hard, so much work, you're wanting so much. No. Enthusiasm was there. So, when the service of Krishna is being performed, there is taste. There is so much taste. There are many different tastes, and we must discover these tastes. We must learn to appreciate all the variety of tastes. Sometimes it's an acquired taste, just like in eating, you know, like in India there are a few preparations, you know, when a Westerner for the first time tastes them, it's somewhat of a shock to the system, right? But an acquired taste. After a while, think, well, it is quite nice. Amalaki. Amalaki. Yeah, nice. Oh, yes, give me some of that amalaki the first time. Amalaki. Amalaki. So, but then later on, amalaki. Yeah, very nice. So, like this, it may be an acquired taste. Sometimes we speak of acquired taste. So some tastes are also acquired tastes. But we must acquire these tastes. This is our shelter. There is nothing else. This is what will give us protection from the attacks of Maya, which are very, very strong. And unless we have taste, we will never be able to resist Maya. There is no question. One cannot just on intellectual understanding resist Maya. Maya will get us. It is not enough to be a philosopher and to just really know very well that this material energy is simply here as an arrangement to test us, right? And that actually controlled by Maya, right, who is seeing how much determined we are in the service of the Lord. One may know all that, but when Maya comes, one will still fall down, right? Unless there is taste. Right. One may not fall down immediately, but with time, one will fall down unless there is taste. There is a need for taste. What is barring us from taste in spiritual life is impurity in the heart. If there is no taste in spiritual life, it means we need more purification. We should be more eager for purification. We should be more appreciative of the purifying agents within the process. We should not take these things so much for granted. The holy name, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is on a table which is higher than the speaker. Srimad Bhagavatam is on a book stand, right? Not just ordinary on the table. All out of a sign of respect so that we may develop the right mood of appreciation. This is not just an ordinary book. No, this is Bhagavatam. This is Bhagavatam. Here, all the nectar is included in this Bhagavatam. All we have to do is unlock it somehow or other. Yeah? Okay, I see. So, while it stands on the table with the book stand, it reminds us like that. So all the attributes that are surrounding us are to be treated with respect so that we remember their glories and that we don't take them for granted. When we are somehow or other not applying ourselves wholeheartedly to the process of devotional service, then what has gone wrong? It means we are taking things for granted. It means we are not sufficiently respectful in our dealings, and then it happens. It is said that when the Vaishnavas became less respectful in their dealings. They began to criticize one another. And immediately deity worship was introduced as the process, right, to rectify that situation. Therefore, we have prescribed Vaishnav behavior. It helps the culture of Vaishnav behavior. And in one sense, that may be some problem we have, because as we were hearing this morning, we are the Kiratas, the Hunandras, the Palindas, the Pulkasas, the Abira, the Kasa races, right? We are all these various races that have no culture. And rather than just not having any culture, we have the wrong culture, right? The wrong culture, right? Whether it is like the French culture, or whether it is the American culture, or whether it is Dutch or any other nationality. All these nationalities are really wrong. All these cultures are wrong, right? So they are an obstruction, actually, in our spiritual life. Now, our movement went from Vrindavan to New York, right? And when it reached New York, Prabhupada was still the same transcendental personality. Brilliant in Vrindavan, effulgent, visible to all as an extraordinary person, right? And certainly equally effulgent in New York. No change. No change. Prabhupada was the same transcendental personality. Nirapeksha. Unaffected. Unaffected. But then our movement began to take hold in America. And in many ways it became an American movement. And we noticed that for a long time, because all the senior devotees in our movement for a long time were from America. And here in Europe, we also noticed it, you know, because I'm remembering my old Sankirtan leader, right, who came and who met the Sankirtan party and who wore a huge nylon jacket, something like this, you know, and blue jeans, and who arrived there on the Sankirtan party early in the morning and said to meet with us, the Sankirtan devotees, and who got him, and who asked one devotee, "Can I have your chadar, please?" And who threw the saffron chadar over his blue jeans, and who sat like that, like Sankirtan Sadhu, and said, "Man, we're gonna take over the world." I still remember. And everyone said, "Wow." Prabhupada fanned the competitive spirit, right? Prabhupada fanned it, right? Because what country in the world is more competitive than the US of A? There is no country that is more competitive. So Prabhupada used all these aspects of conditioned nature to push on this movement of Lord Chaitanya. Now that the years are going by, and now that Srila Prabhupada is not personally here to balance out the situation, now that we have to balance it out ourselves, now we realize that we are lacking culture. We're realizing more and more. And actually, it is this lack of culture which makes it difficult. Which makes it difficult for us. The more we absorb ourselves in Vaishnav culture, the easier it becomes. The easier it becomes. Because actually, the culture of Sadachar, or of Vaishnav behavior, is the behavior of the spiritual world. It is actually not invented on this planet. It is actually directly the nature of the dealings in the spiritual sky, which are coming through this movement. So how many times did Prabhupada say, when the American devotees were shaved up with tilak, dhotis, and the whole thing, and said, "They are Vaikuntha men. They look like Vaikuntha men." Right? Yes, Vaikuntha culture, Vaikuntha way of life, So how important is it actually to absorb this Vaishnav culture, because it is Vaikuntha culture, the culture of the spiritual world, respectful. Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes it is amazing when two personalities meet each other, right? There are so many, there's so much respect exchanged there, you know, whole speeches, right? Something like, my dear Prabhu, right? I'm not worthy of speaking, but still I feel compelled to do so because there happens to be no one else qualified present, therefore I'm coming forward, unqualified as I am, to speak of your glories. You go like, I mean, as a Western person, you go like, okay. You know, how long is this gonna go on, you know? I mean, get to the point, man. What do you want to say? Come on, you know, what do you want to say? Right? I mean, spit it out, man. Come on, you know. Come on. So, how removed are we from that culture? Right? So far away. Right? And it's difficult for us. Very difficult. Still, very valuable for us also to absorb more of this culture, because it will help us so much. It will help us to curb the passionate mind. It will help us to overcome the pushing of the senses. Whereas it will help us to avoid offenses. So many times I've been involved in ISKCON in discussions about this guy and that guy. Right? And now, in Hindi, of course, the word guy means cow, but in America, the word guy, oftentimes, it is not exactly the same as this Prabhu and that Prabhu, isn't it? You know, it has a different kind of connotation when you speak about a guy, right? It's like the guy, right? I guess it could be in a positive way, he's a nice guy, but still, the mood is totally different. So it's very important, actually, that we are conscious of the culture of Bhagavatam, because this is spiritual culture. And this will help us. This will make the restrictions that we are following very natural, because they are so much part of that culture. Anyway, this is an important point, I think, because I think that our movement is getting ready for that, right? From taking the pulse, right, and seeing what the situation is. It seems to me that this is now becoming an important point. And sometimes we have devotees that feel we should have Varna Ashram, you know, that Varna Ashram is the solution for our society. It's Varna Ashram. So the other day I was reading in The Harmonist, which is, as you know, the publication that was introduced by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he wrote in it himself, and also his senior disciples were writing in it. And there was an article about Varna Ashram, which said that Varna Ashram is a necessary evil. Yeah. It said that it's a necessary evil. It's not, it said, that we are so much into Varna Ashram. It said, but because we have to regulate material life, we are accepting the codes of Varna Ashram. But Vaishnava is beyond Varna Ashram in one sense. Vaishnava platform means beyond even Varna Ashram, directly on the platform of devotional service. So it was nice. And therefore, I would like to say that to those devotees who are propagating Varna Ashram as the dissolution for the lack of culture in Krishna consciousness, then I would, in our movement, like I should say, then I would say that, well, that's nice, that will add a lot of culture, but beyond it, I still feel that we need Vaishnav culture. Maybe because I had the good fortune of staying a long time in Vrindavan, that I've become very much impressed with that. Because in Vrindavan, Varna Ashram didn't mean so much. Like we had a barber in Vrindavan, right? Now, barber is a real low-class occupation. It's almost like muchi, almost like, you know, a shoemaker. I mean, it's like approaching the untouchables, you know, a barber, right? A barber is almost untouchable at times because, you know, when he's involved with his occupation and hasn't taken a bath, if you touch him, you also have to take a bath. So therefore, it's like very, in the whole intricacy of caste, it's very low. So we used to have a barber, and this barber even shaved Prabhupada, right? So, you know, and he was a devotee, right? So, you know, we would like not consider the barber some sort of muchi. We would consider the barber an exalted soul, right? A great Vaishnava. And we always used to have nice Krishna Katha with the barber, right? While he was shaving our heads and things like that. And it was actually quite nice. And then we asked him again, tell us how it was when you shaved Prabhupada, right? Well, and then he told the whole story. Well, you know, he sent his secretary to call me. Yeah? The whole story came again. It's just like, yes, it's very nice. Tell the details about Prabhupada's head and this, that. It was very transcendental. So it was a transcendental barber. So the mood in Vrindavan is not Varna Ashram. Right? Not at all. The mood in Vrindavan is everybody's transcendental. Right? So nobody cares, right? You use a rickshaw, and of course you treat the rickshaw as a rickshawala, because he's a rickshawala, you know, and you argue with him about the price, but in the end, you know, he's a Vaishnava rickshawala. He's not some sort of low class, he's a Vaishnava. So you treat him with respect, he's a Vaishnava, right? So this whole spirit of Vaishnava culture is so nice, and will actually do it, right? It will give us the culture by which we will automatically be able to handle the austerity, because it's part of the culture. And it will protect us from committing offenses which will destroy the taste that we are developing in devotional service. We think, well, you know, am I committing offenses or am I not committing offenses? Right? I must be committing offenses, because I'm not experiencing the greatest ecstasy, but I don't also remember exactly which offenses I'm committing. Anyway, I guess I'm committing some offenses, something like that, right? Yes, we are committing offenses, and these offenses are destroying our tastes again and again. And then we need again the lower taste, even after so many years, even after everything that we've adopted, even after everything we've learned for all these years, even all the habits we have performed, still a little bit of lower taste. Yeah, just a little. Because of offenses. So therefore, we must be so careful with committing Vaishnava aparad. And therefore culture, Vaishnava culture, is automatically going to help us. That will protect us from Vaishnava aparad. So it is very important. All right, with that I will end and see if there's any comments or questions. Yes?
I'm not sure that when the Vaishnavas were criticizing, then it was introduced, the deity worship was introduced. Could you say something more about it?
It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that at the end of the...
Yes.
Thank you. He's very quick. Anyway, like that, like Jyoti told us, it was introduced, the process of deity worship, to regulate the Vaishnava, or different dealings between people became careless like that. So we also need that. Yeah, we need that. And therefore deity worship is very important, an important part of our life. Although the process is for this age is chanting Hare Krishna, still we're always busy with the deities. We live in temples, we go to temples. That helps very much. And therefore one should be absorbed in deity worship. Of course, every one of us is involved with deity worship, whether you're on the altar or not. We live in a temple, we do the kirtan for the deities and so forth. But it helps very much to be involved in deity worship because we're getting some culture from that. Some, how to behave, how not to behave. Everything is prescribed in front of the deity. Any other question?
About austerity. In India, things can be quite austere sometimes. So I wonder what is the benefit of doing austerity for which you are not fit?
In India, it can be quite austere at times. And Prabhu wonders what the benefit will be from austerities for which one is not fit. I find there are two separate statements, and to connect them, I find is a little awkward. I would say that India is the land of physical austerity, and that the West is the land of mental austerity. And that here, there is tremendous mental austerity, tremendous mental anxiety. Here, we have to follow four regulative principles, and we are bombarded with illicit sex in the most tricky ways. They're trying to zoom our mind in on illicit sex once again and arouse our sex desire in so many ways, right? This is just one aspect of the mental austerity of Western society. So many types of austerity, mental austerity in the West. Too many. India is so nice, so nice. Lust is so much less present. India is a haven. India is a paradise. India is the most wonderful place. Oh boy, how much austerity to live in this Western world. God, you know, to have to travel here from city to city in these horrible conditions. How are we doing it? I don't know. When can we go back, you know, to the Holy Land, right? Boy, and roll in the dust of Delhi, such a holy place, right? Right? John. And then, you know, God, am I in separation of Delhi, where Maya is a joke, right? Here, Maya means business, right? Here, Maya is full on. In Delhi, you laugh at Maya. Is this sense gratification? I saw a little video clip of an ambassador, right? And this man gets into the ambassador, and he starts the ambassador, and he moves backwards, and he smashes into the wall. Bang! He starts it up again, he goes forward, and he's like, bang! Smashes into the front. And then again, back in front. Bang, bang, bang. And after the banging is all over, the whole shape of the ambassador has changed, right? And it's the new Peugeot that has been introduced in India. That's pretty good. and oh boy, what a joke, the new Peugeot in India. Ha ha ha. It's still an ambassador, right? What kind of sense gratification they've got? Nah. India is the land. Finally, we're free. Free from everything that has bombarded us from our very birth. The day we took birth, someone told you, this baby food, right, specially enriched with vitamins, will make you strong and powerful. Therefore, only this baby food is your baby food, you know. And that's how it was, right, from the day we took birth, right. God, they didn't even let me choose my own baby food. Just a little Dutch saying in the north of Holland, they say, break me the back knee open. Which means don't break open my mouth, you know. So anyway, I'm going to shut up about this point now. I'll go to the second part of your question, right? Which was maybe more what you were aiming at. Which was that should we... how about austerities that are beyond what we can handle? Yes, That is over-endeavor. We should not go for over-endeavor. But at the same time, right, we should... we cannot be our own doctor. Right? Who could operate on his own heart? Right? If you have some heart failure, even if you're a surgeon, you know, you put a mirror and you start just like, you know, cutting here, you cut it open, right? Sew it up, put some new tubes and things like this. I don't think it's very realistic. Right? Therefore, in the same way, we are never the authority to decide which austerity is too much and which one is not. It is really our... We have to depend on spiritual authority. Because if we ourselves start saying, yes, I should not take more austerity than I can handle, then the tendency is to say, well, but this is maybe too austere, and maybe that also, and that also very austere. It's all too austere, actually. And then even getting up from bed one day will be too austere, you know, like that. It doesn't mean that we cannot give a signal to a superior and say that, I think that this is really getting too austere for me, you know. I mean, can we have a little warm water mixed in with the cold? I'm regularly turning blue, and I think it may not be entirely auspicious. So it's not that we cannot speak or use our intelligence, but we better take some guidance from a senior Vaishnava. Otherwise, we may make it too soft on ourselves. And some austerity is helpful. Like in Vrindavan, you know, everything, the traditional life was austere. No heating, no... But then you had the water from the well, and the water from the ground is always warm, right? So it is only when we introduce modern mechanistic pumps, right, that ice water is like being... When water is put in tanks, you know, then in the morning it's murderous water. But when the water comes straight from the well, it's quite okay, it's tolerable, right? One can handle it. So like this, the traditional life is actually... it was tolerable and actually favorable. To walk around with your water pot for drinking water is actually a healthy thing, you know, to lift some water, and a little austerity for that is actually not bad at all. Sleeping on a mat was actually quite nice, although it was a little harsh, but you got used to it, and it was actually better than on some big fluffy mattress, you know, that tries to eat you while you live on it, you know. And all the juices of the body sink into this mattress every night, get sucked into it, and it's full of living entities that are living on that perspiration, right? And they're in those mattresses, like, yes, and they come out at night and they crawl all over you. And while you're lying there with your mouth open, foaming on the pillow, which absorbs all the foam from your... Oh. Yes. Any other ventures? You had a hand. I saw your hand before. Yes. Comes out of its own accord.
Yeah, in the sense that people just sort of naturally do, like in this community, they just do what's natural for them. Some people become Brahmins and do worship on the altar, and some people like to take out the garbage and plant. And, you know, there's different occupations just come according to one's nature.
Yes. Yes, that is true. Varnashram comes on its own accord because it's the natural division of mankind. And in devotional service, we also see these natural tendencies. But then there is the other element, you know, the element of surrendered soul, right? The surrendered soul who does for Krishna really something that's totally not his nature, right? But he just does it because it needs to be done. And there was no one who wanted to do it. And then, well, what to do? Then he just did it. Right? So that's also there. And that's where a Vaishnava, you know, goes beyond, right? Goes beyond Varna Ashram and goes beyond his natural occupation into, like, you know, just anything and everything, whatever Krishna needs, right? And so in that way, although Varnashram comes natural, I think there's also the natural element of just doing the needful for Krishna beyond Varnashram, and even doing things that have nothing to do with your nature. And I'm sure all of us have encountered that also many times. You know, I mean, I've done many things that were not my nature. God, I've been a bookkeeper once. You know, I've done the books. That's not me. Believe me. I've been a farmer. That's not me either. I'm not a farmer. But I've been a farmer. Yeah. I've been that. Construction. I'm allergic to construction. 6 years construction. And then we stand on the street, book distribution. Now, I knew one devotee, he used to sell encyclopedias door to door, you know, before he was a devotee. You know, put his foot in the door, elbow in the door, head around the door. And sell these big encyclopedias. But most of us didn't come from that background, etc. Right? And for most of us, you know, we had to swallow a little bit, you know, when we stand. And, oh, excuse me, sir, are you from here? We're out of town. We're handing him out today. I mean, I don't know how you took to it, but for me, it was a struggle. Was it a struggle? It took a while before I tasted the nectar of book distribution. I mean, it wasn't on the first day, I tell you that. Yeah, so therefore, it's not only that we act according to our nature, we also act for the pleasure of Prabhupada. And that's why we stand out there on the street with the books, because he wanted it so much. What can we do? The last, but not the least.
Do you recommend any fasting except Ekadashi and appearance to disappear?
Just follow the Vaishnava calendar and be happy. Thank you very much, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.